got a minute seven. You still got a chance. If you score a touchdown and an extra point, you could win it 24-23.
Just so happened I was at the game when Brett came in for the first time against Cincinnati. So sort of for the birth of Brett Favre.
Here's Favre. Favre goes straight back in the pocket. Now he pumps it. Now he's going to the end zone. There's a man.
He's wide
it's
open.
A touchdown. It is caught, and it is Kittrick Taylor. Oh, my goodness.
Looking back, it's pretty cool. We didn't know then. We thought Mikowski might be back and whatever, but from that point on, Favre, how much fun was he to watch? They got Reggie, and you could see things building. I think Reggie was the block that they built the team around, because then they got defense and they were off and running. So 96, I was working for CBS at the time. The biggest thing I remember about that year, we're covering a world championship bobsled in St. Moritz in Switzerland on Super Bowl Sunday. They showed it at the hotel we were at, and then the game didn't start till 2 in the morning. But we were down there in the bar watching the game, and it was not quite the same watching the game in Switzerland. But believe me, there were some fans there. It was pretty cool.
Favre deals down. The Packers are going to enjoy the Lombardi Trophy.
Having so many kids, and my dad was a police officer, my mom was a nurse. We didn't have a lot of money, but we never knew it. As far as we knew, we had everything we wanted and needed, and they found a way. We had one TV in the house, and it was down in the basement, and Sunday was football day, and we'd watch the Packers. In fact, we used to do a little pool within the family, and it was, I think it was $1 for everybody put a dollar in, and you got your number, you know, seven or whatever it was, and it was just the end of the game. It wasn't like each quarter like they do now. But boy, if I won one time, you know, I'd pick up $9. That was a big deal for me. I remember that. You know, growing up, they weren't a winning team, but I always knew of their winning legacy. I always knew they were the Green Bay Packers. I always knew they were world champions before that era. Being the ninth of nine, it just wasn't a question of keeping the faith. It was just, this is our team, you know, and we cheered every little thing, whether it was a loss that, you know, they actually scored some touchdowns or whatever. It was, we were happy about it. It's always something to be proud of. And as I've gotten older, it's even more so because of the state of sports these days and the business it's become. It's literally such a unique team, owned by the fans and owned by the city. You know, there's no other team like that. All we can really do is prepare ourselves the very best we can prepare and then go out and do the very best you can do. The result is a result, and you hope it's good, and you believe it's going to be, but it's not always.
West Allis native Dan Jansen, one of the most decorated speed skaters of all time, began competing before most children can ride a bike.
I didn't know any better. Literally four, and they didn't get a babysitter. They just took me along to the rink and got me some skates, you know, some old hand-me-downs, and that was it.
By the age of 18, Jansen was skating in Yugoslavia as a member of the United States Olympic team. He missed winning a bronze medal in the 500 by 16 hundredths of a second.
He had a foundation of talent. He grew up in a family of skaters. When you have older brothers, you always strive to do what you can to, you know, beat them or be on par with them. But then he took that talent, he took that experience and opportunity in that and said, look, I'm gonna go out there and be the best in the world.
The 1988 Winter Olympics were supposed to be a coronation for Dan. He entered the games as the world champion and was expected to win gold. On the day of his first race, however, just hours before he would toe the line in the 500, he learned that leukemia had taken the life of his sister, Jane. Dan competed valiantly in the 500 and 1,000, but fell to the ice during both races. Arguably, the world's best sprinter left Canada without a medal.
Probably one of the things that maybe helped him was how close his family was. I can't imagine doing it. He was very close with Jane. I went to school with Jane. And so to be able to stand on that line, certainly were a lot of distractions, and you know, we saw what happened. But again, hats off to him because he found a way to keep working through that, never losing sight of the goal of trying to get on that podium.
4 years later in France, Dan's quest for an Olympic medal was washed away by poor ice conditions brought on by warm temperatures and rain. Jansen finished fourth in the 500 and 26th in the 1,000.
The result is a result, and you hope it's good, and you believe it's going to be, but it's not always. And that's the other thing you learn, is that as much as you are prepared, sometimes life takes different turns. Sometimes there's different plans for us.
Plans were very different after the 1992 Games because for the first and only time, the Winter Olympics would be held just 2 years apart.
After three Olympics and being at the top for quite some time, it's just nice to know that, wow, the next year is a post-Olympic year, which are usually kind of downers, but it's also a pre-Olympic year in one. That will never happen again. So it's super easy to motivate the year after the 92 Games, which is generally gets to be a difficult thing to do.
Jansen arrived in Lillehammer, Norway as the world record holder in the 500, but a slip in the final turn sent him to a disappointing eighth place finish.
When I slipped in that 500, it was heartbreaking, devastating. It was all those things, so painful. And then I had 3 days to kind of let that go and say, yeah, I got one more shot.
Jansen's last shot, the 1,000, by his admission, not his strongest race. But nevertheless, he provided one of the most endearing moments in the history of the Winter Olympics.
And here he comes. Dan Jansen looks good to be in the lead. Here is Dan Jansen, and he crosses it. 1:12:43, and it is a world record.
It's usually something different every time I see it. Just a different feeling, a different memory, a different, you know, way to look at the race. Sometimes I'm critiquing my technique, and other times I'm just looking at the crowd or my reaction when I cross the line or whatever. And it's really been fun through the years to see it so many times. Jane passed my second games on the day of my race, and now, you know, I've got baby Jane. After the national anthem, they said, you got to go get your skates and take a lap. And I'm like, okay. So I got those, and I look, and she's hanging over the railing. It's really one of the most special moments of my life that I can ever imagine. And I get to see that and feel that memory a lot, and I never, ever get tired of it.
Most of you know we lost the youngest of our five sisters, Jane, to leukemia. Made a promise while I was still skating that we were going to do something to give back, and we started the foundation. Cool Kids, we were able to partner up. They asked me if I would be willing to partner up with them and start something here in Charlotte.
Our mission is to improve the quality of life for children living with cancer, and we do that through academic, emotional, and social support. So none of our money goes into research. It all goes back into the families. No matter where you are in the country, no child with cancer should have to go through the fight alone. They need to know that they have support, and hopefully through the Cool Kids campaign and the Dan Jansen Foundation, we're able to provide a smile on their face and let them know that we're there for them.
I know that we need a cure, and we need, obviously, that's the most important thing, but I wanted sort of immediate feedback. When Jane was sick, she had her bone marrow transplant in Seattle. My parents lived there for almost a year. I went to donate platelets, my sister with the bone marrow, and it's expensive. So we created a family aid fund. We help families, and they're mostly non-medical expenses. people, they're going to lose their power next week because they can't afford the bill because they have to be here with their young son or daughter who's being treated. The family aid's been kind of rewarding, and you know, we help the families, and then Cool Kids just betters the lives of kids with cancer. And so it really is a nice kind of meshing together, and we work well together. A few years ago, they just approached me and said, you know, would you be interested in hosting a tournament? And I said, you know what, maybe, but here's the deal. If I host it, I'm not one of those guys who sits back and just lets everybody run the show. I'm really involved. It's literally a three-day event. We start on Saturday night with a pairings party and auction raffle. That's where we hope to make some good money. Sunday, we have a great time. We do a cruise out on the lake. We do a concert. My friends from Rascal Flatts are coming into play. We've got Jason Sheff from Chicago. And then Monday is the event that kind of caps everything off.
What I do for a living, boy.
Dan is one of the most genuine, caring individuals you've ever met. He's a huge integral part of getting some of the sponsors, getting a lot of the celebrities, helping me coordinate, you know, the evening activities.
And that's Dan. I mean, he doesn't get involved in anything if it's not going to be 100%. And obviously there is a great deal of pride that he has in knowing where this money's going. And you couldn't ask for a better partner with Karen, because I think she's the same way. And it's kind of nice to come down and be a part of an event like this, because you know what it means to him and what it means to Karen.
I mean, I play golf all the time, but this is more special than other times, definitely, because it's so important for families that are affected by cancer.
Oh yeah, nice shot.
Helping kids out, almost all the athletes that I know, after they get out of the sports that they're playing, they want to do things that help kids, because you know, baseball is a grown man playing a kid's game, and so we're all kids.
Okay, who's going next?
Bye-bye.
I guess I always feel I'm just the free entertainment with the group that I'm going to play with. Okay, that's all right by me. As long as I can keep them happy and light and airy, you know, we might not win any prizes, but we're going to have fun, and we know it's for a great cause.
Oh, yeah!
Known Dan for quite a long time. We were playing golf on the Celebrity Players Tour, which we started back in 1990. And I played golf with him a few times. Pretty good golfer. Much better skater.
Actually, I met Dan because I gave him a golf lesson. We have some challenges, but we keep on working on it.
In skating, you're side to side, and you're getting over this side and then over this side. And I want to do that in golf when I get behind the ball. I want to move my whole body laterally. You don't, in golf, you have to go this way.
You know, Dan, for 25 years, was trying to keep his upper body really still. And then now I'm trying to get him to rotate, so that's not natural. But every speed skater that I've seen play golf has the same exact move.
Part of it's mental, too, in golf. Because the problem is, I know I don't have what it takes to be that. Why? She goes, why can't you think the way you did on the ice? And I said, well, because I knew I was good on the ice. I just know I'm not that good when I play golf. So I have my limits on the course, but we have fun.
Meeting Dan, talking to him about this event, we understood where each other were coming from.
That's for you, Dan.
It's our goal to continue fighting for the families and providing services that really benefit the child with cancer, the sibling, and the parents.
Our help is not coming in thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to these families. It's coming in increments of hundreds of dollars, which is still great, but that's kind of enabled us to stretch it out in thin times. And then now we're building again, and we're getting some momentum. And so, you know, hopefully it'll be even more in the next several years. So here's a funny story. So I remember somebody tosses a cheese head out, and I put it on for literally, couldn't have been 5 seconds. And I was kind of, yeah, all right, enough. Because that's just kind of not my personality either. But I did put it on, and it was there. It had to be 10 years ago. I did a speech in Minnesota. two guys were in the audience, come up after, and the guy said, "I'm the one who threw you the cheese head in Lillehammer." It was unbelievable. I don't know where it is. I know I brought it home because it came home with us, but somewhere it's lost in the shuffle, I think. But yeah, pretty cool.
DJ's stick-to-itiveness, you know, never give up, and I get goosebumps thinking about it. Yeah, he had his frustrations along the way, but he didn't ever give up. You can't create stories like that, right?
I don't remember my life not knowing Bonnie. You know, I had five sisters, but Bonnie was number six for sure.
When DJ finally won in 94, I actually wasn't at the race that day because I had to race the next day.
They didn't have cell phones or any of that, so we had walkie-talkies. So I'm doing a press conference, and then somebody comes, the USOC comes up, and somebody wants to talk to you.
Now, prior to him knowing I was on the other end of that walkie-talkie, he actually thought it was the President of the United States.
This was actually before the President called and the First Lady called, but first person, and I come on, and I hear this voice of Bonnie's very distinctive voice, and I'm not going to curse, but she actually cursed. She goes, "You just won a bleeping gold medal," and it was like, "Bon, I know." It was just, it was so cool.
Being able to at least have some sort of connection with him prior to my race really meant the world to me.
You know, she wanted to be there, but that also, I think, gave her such a lift for her race the next day, and then she went on to win two golds, so it was amazing.
Olympic champion and gold medalist, Daniel Johnson, USA, the United States of America.
You know, the best part for me was knowing that my family was going to be able to celebrate, finally, because that always hurt me. Look, I mean, probably should have at least four gold medals or, you know, maybe five. And it just didn't happen. And so it was like, and then after the 500, it didn't happen again. So after the 1,000, first and foremost, I was just so happy that my family was going to have a fun night. It's kind of the same thing when I got home, the homecoming and the parades and all that. And just the people, when I would see them out on the street or wherever. I literally had people, you know, parking and taking pictures on my front lawn, and that was a little odd for me because I went, you know, a month earlier, I left and I was just me. I mean, the people knew who I was. Now I come home and they want a picture on my lawn. It was just, it was odd.
Believe this. Thank you.
I don't mind. I never did. If people come up and want a picture or an autograph or just to say hi, it's an honor.
Thank you very much. Very much. Congratulations.
Thanks.
How can you be offended if somebody wants to say hello or to congratulate you? I mean, so I've always kind of embraced it.
Here it is.
Welcome to Green Bay on a hot day as Green Bay welcomes Cincinnati to town.
During football season, we kind of make our schedule around the Packers game, definitely.
And he's hammered at the 21-yard line.
And, you know, he takes it pretty seriously, so he likes to watch. He doesn't really like to talk too much.
Well, when the games get bigger and bigger, I don't really even like to have parties because I just like to watch each play, and that's just the way I like to watch a game. Early in the season, I still will watch every play. I'm not one of those yeller and screamer guys. I just watch. Happens and I'm like, all right, well, let's move on and we'll take care of that next time.
Rodgers rolling to the end zone, and it is touchdown, Jordy Nelson.
Mike and I both grew up in West Dallas. He's a big fan, and he gets a little more excited than I do, but he's fun to watch with. He was a few years older than I, but he was on the 80 Olympic team. Between 80 and 84, we trained together nearly every day. And, you know, since he's been one of my best friends, one of my closest friends, good times and bad. And Mike's obviously gone on to do great things in the business world. you know, I look to Mike as a bit of a mentor in that side of things. I lean on him for a lot of advice, help in different ways. Speaking of Sundays, I mean, that's the other part of our Sundays. It's usually texting back and forth because he's watching just as intently as I am. I probably watched 6 or 8 games at County Stadium as I grew up. So much different than Lambeau because it's a baseball stadium, and depending on where you're sitting, sometimes you just feel real far away. For us, it was neat. I mean, the Packers were there. They were in Milwaukee.
Favre is down the sidelines. Favre, touchdown! He dived into the end zone.
Unbelievable.
Now, again, as I get older, it's worth the 2-hour drive to go to Lambeau. And you know, they would never, ever consider that again, thank God. But while it lasted, it was pretty neat. I'd been, obviously, several times before the changes, if you will, and the growth of the place. But now it's like this modern old place. But the best thing about Lambeau, and people around here now will, you know, will go and come home with these stories. The greatest thing about Lambeau is really the like before the game, the tailgating in people's driveways, using people's houses. Like, they're just like, come on in, you need the bathroom. And they got 30 people traipsing through their house. They're sitting in the corner watching TV, and it's every week they do this. Like, no other stadium in the country, no way does this happen. It's really remarkable.